The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
I'm here. I really am here. I'm just getting an adjustment to hopefully get us going on Twitch and Twitter and a few other places. So bear with me. Control V. That should work. In a perfect world, it would work. Let's see. Let's see if this will work now. Start. We'll find out momentarily. Hi, welcome to it. It is Christmas Eve Eve. Today is, I think it worked. Today is actually, believe it or not, Festivus. Now, we had our Festivus celebration yesterday because today is Thursday. It's Howie Klein Day. So, you know, I decided to do it a day early. And I thought it was okay. We had fun, you know, obviously. Some bugs to work out, but we made it. We made it through. We had fun. Few little glitches. And I didn't start YouTube yet. Here we go, YouTube. Hold on. It's coming. You know, I had the mess up with the Twitch thing. So I forgot to start YouTube, but YouTube is here now. So happy Festivus.
A Festivus for the rest of us.
Okay. And we're done with Festivus now. Although we may air some more grievances when Howie Klein gets here because there's a lot to talk about. So before we get to Howie, you know, yesterday, I think it was Dan who called in from wherever Dan lives. And he mentioned, what's his name? John M. I'm so losing my mind. Barry, John M. Barry, who wrote the book on the pandemic of 1918. It was called The Great Pandemic, I believe. And he's been on this program a couple of times, right? And so talking about the pandemic and what Dan told us is from reading John Barry's book that he's thinking that Omicron, this might be a good thing because if he remembered from reading the book correctly, Omicron, back in 1918, other strains of the virus came through and sort of overtook the original strain and eventually it went away. So rather than take Dan's word for it, not that I don't believe Dan, but I thought, you know, John Barry has been on the program a couple of times. Let's get him back on the show and we'll find out. So I spoke with him earlier today. It is the holiday week. People are in and out, so I was lucky to get him. We spoke a few hours ago, and here's what he had to say.
Joining us on the line right now is John M. Barry. He's the author of a number of books, but most notably, one that we've been talking about is The Great Influenza, the story of the deadliest pandemic in history. John, thank you so much for coming back today. You've been on the show a couple of times in the past couple of years since we've been dealing with COVID-19. And actually a listener brought you up yesterday, a caller to the program, when we were talking about the Omicron variant. So, and he said he bought your book, The Great Influenza, after hearing you on the show. And he read it and he said, it sounds like with this Omicron, it's what John Barry described how the Spanish flu of 1918 ended. So I thought rather than listen to him or try to remember from my reading to go right to the source and ask you to back up a bit, the great influenza, the 1918 Spanish flu, did eventually end. So how did it end?
Well, first, happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you. The same to you. Yes.
And second, the reader is probably pretty accurate. The, you know, whether that happens this time remains to be seen. However, you know, I actually wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post that ran in October when I was talking about some of these things. Maybe you can, have a link on your site and so forth. What happened in 1918, you had a first wave that was not particularly transmissible and, interestingly, extremely mild. a variant emerged. You got a second wave that was extremely transmissible and also very, very deadly, much deadlier than anything we've seen COVID-19. But kind of curiously, if you were sick in the first wave, you had up to 94% protection against death in the second wave.
Wow.
And for influenza, that's extraordinary. The best influenza vaccine we've ever developed was 61% effective. Oh, usually it's in the 40s.
Wow. Okay.
A third wave developed, which if you were sick in either the first or second wave, you didn't have any protection whatsoever against getting sick in the third wave.
Wow.
You know, what happened was, a variant emerged, obviously, that escaped immunity. And the October Washington Post op-ed, I did say that the most likely future scenario would be that we would see a variant that escaped immune protection. I think probably every virologist would have agreed with that. Several I talked to did agree with that.
And Omicron seems to be less susceptible to the vaccines that are out now, right?
Right. The other part of it is that third wave, it was still much deadlier than the first wave, but it was also less deadly than the second wave. Okay. How much of that was the virus itself mutating? And how much of it was that people's immune systems had some cross protection because they'd already just gone through an influenza outbreak? It's not entirely clear. That third wave came in March 1919, lasted a couple of months. In the fall of 1920, influenza was pretty bad, but nothing like the second or third waves. You know, some people consider it a fourth wave of the pandemic. Personally, I don't. I think there were three, but it's only a question of semantics.
Okay.
However, by 1921, the virus had tamed itself, and we were back to normal seasonal influenza. Now, one of the things about the 1918 virus that made it deadly was it was able not only to bind to cells in the upper respiratory tract, which made it very transmissible, but it could also bind to cells deep in the lung, which made it very dangerous. You know, SARS-CoV-2 can do both. Ordinary influenza viruses very rarely bind to cells deep in the lung. They can kill you for all sorts of reasons, but you rarely see the cytokine storms and so forth that were caused both by the 1918 virus and by SARS, by SARS-1, by MERS, by SARS-CoV-2, you know, COVID.
Which is COVID, right.
The interesting thing about, a lot of interesting things, Omicron, according to some studies, has less ability to bind to cells deep in the lung.
Yes.
Than either Delta or predecessor variants of SARS-CoV-2.
Right. And that's a big distinction, isn't it? Because I bring it all to a personal level because that's how I understand things. But I'm a lung cancer survivor, missing most of my left lung. And my oncologist had warned me that I'm no more susceptible to catching it than anyone else. But if I got pneumonia from COVID, I'd be in deep trouble. This makes it a lot less dangerous for someone like me, right?
That's correct. And, you know, whether or not the next variant is going to continue in that direction or whether it's going to move back to something else, we have no way of knowing. There is a theory that the 1889 influenza pandemic, which was, it was nothing like 1918, but it was considerably more severe than what we saw in 1957, 1968, or 2009. But there's a theory that was actually caused by a coronavirus, which is called OC43, and which today causes the common cold.
Right.
Now, you know, the evidence for that theory is interesting, but it's not compelling. I'm not an advocate of it. I'm agnostic about whether it's accurate or whether it's true or not, but it's very interesting. You know, the hope would be, of course, that COVID-19 goes away, the common cold. If it does that, we really have no idea, you know, when that would happen.
Right.
You know?
But so John Barry, so in 1918, actually 1920 now, it kept morphing basically and finally just petered out. Is that what happened? Like a less.
Yeah, well, it didn't peter out, but it did become less deadly and like ordinary seasonal influenza, which is not the common cold.
Right.
You know, it is a lot more serious than the common cold. Before this pandemic, it could kill as many as 60,000 Americans a year, including a lot of kids.
Sure. Well, something I read about Omicron is that they identified a string of the DNA code, I guess, that is the same as the common cold. And maybe that is the reason that this is so communicable, that it's so much more contagious. I don't know. I'm certainly not. I have
RNA,
no medical.
Not DNA, not to be overly technical.
Sorry. Gotcha. RNA, duh. Like in the vax, like in the mRNA. But it had the code that is identical to the common cold, which. So it's related. I mean, the cold is a coronavirus, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of viruses cause the common cold, but several coronaviruses are among
backwards.
Them.
I gotcha. So when you heard about the what they're saying about Omicron is a couple of things. One is that they're finding, I think three studies were released yesterday or thereabouts, saying that it doesn't appear to be as deadly. It's not as people don't get as sick on it. And then the latest thing we're hearing is in South Africa, in less than a month, they say the wave has gone from a near vertical rise to a near vertical fall, that it's going away as quickly as it came on, and that we're about a month behind them. So this surge that we're having might be short-lived.
Yeah, actually, just a few minutes ago, I was looking at a very detailed 40-slide presentation on from South Africa, exactly what's going on there. That's interesting and very hopeful. You know, like everybody else, I'm saying it's a little bit too early to jump to any conclusions. There was also a study that the British study that said there is no indication that Omicron is less severe.
Oh,
again, it's not clear whether the reported relative mildness in South Africa is because, the population has already been infected and therefore has immunity, or whether it's inherent within the virus itself.
And because it's all new.
If you're unvaccinated and never been infected, it may be every bit as severe. If you're vaccinated, even if you haven't been boosted, in terms of severe disease, You certainly have some protection. It's not clear how much. If you're boosted, you're in much, much better shape. That is crystal clear. So it's hard to parse out, what is the virus itself? What is people's immune systems giving them some protection? It's also a little bit early, because it's a slow-moving disease. It takes several weeks for, in many cases, one after you're infected before you get seriously ill, if you are going to get seriously ill. So we're a little early in the process, but things do look pretty optimistic.
You mentioned an op-ed you wrote in the Washington Post a few months back. I'm looking at one that you wrote that was published on January 31st, 2020, which was before most of us even knew that this was a thing. And the headline reads, opinion, can this virus be contained? Probably not. So you were saying that before.
The title for that was actually, this virus cannot be contained.
Okay. Well, okay, there you go. Well,
actually, I pulled some of my punches there. I didn't want to get too far out.
But you called it before the rest of us even realized that this was going to happen. I mean, I remember hearing the name Dr. Nancy Messonnier stays in my head because she was the first one to sound the warning bell in the middle of or the end of February. I think it was February 25th. So this was a full month earlier. You were sounding the alarm. So if you had to guess, you had to make an educated guess on when we're going to get past this. I mean, a lot of us didn't think we'd still be, you know, hunkering down Christmas time in 2021 as we're bringing in 2022. Do you think this is going to be with us for the foreseeable future in some form?
Well, it's certainly going to be with us in terms of infecting people. You know, the question is how serious it's going to be. You know, I was not alone in January. I remember I wrote that op-ed on January 24th. Usually it takes me days to even to write an op-ed, but I did that in a couple of hours. It seemed so obvious. And, you know, I know a lot of people in the public health community and pandemic experts. Everybody I talked to in January was saying, yeah, this thing's coming. I don't really understand why. I mean, well, let's not get into that part of it. You know, that, almost 2 years ago, where we are now, you know, it's hard to make predictions. I thought that the immunity that people would have either from vaccination or from infection, because right now we got to be over 80% of the population and probably well over 80% of the population is either, you know, the adults, over 70% of the adult population is vaccinated. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got what we know of over 50 million infections, and it's probably close to double that in reality. So a huge portion of the population should have some immune protection. And I think that you need to begin to shift from the case count to the death count in terms of paying attention to the disease. We're still well over 1,000 case deaths a day, which is
too much,
very high. And I would have expected by now that it would have be significantly less than that.
Well, do you think it isn't? Do you think that it's still so high, such a high infection rate, because so many people are refusing to take the vaccine?
Well, clearly that's a major factor. Clearly that's the major factor. But a lot of those people who are refusing the vaccine have been infected and therefore have some protection anyway. You know, we don't have any numbers, and I haven't really seen any good estimates on what percentage of the unvaccinated have gotten infected. Mm-hmm. We don't know that. So I am, you know, still unhappily surprised by the number of deaths. I thought, given the amount of immune protection in the population, the daily death count would be significantly lower than it is now.
And it seemed like we were headed there until Omicron arrived on the scene. I mean, people
Omicron still hasn't killed me.
The deaths
we are seeing now are still from Delta.
Delta. Wow.
Omicron hasn't been here long enough to kill large numbers of people.
I see. It's just more and more people are testing positive, but they're not dying in greater numbers.
And that death count may climb in the next week, 10 days. There is a lag between, you know, testing positive and serious disease.
Okay, so my non-professional feeling that because we're hearing Omicron is spiking fast and then going away quickly, and it seems to be less severe, certainly lung damage, less severe illness by some reports, not all, that I was hoping that, but the way it's taken over, like in a matter of days, it became the dominant variant here.
That is amazing. That astounds everybody.
And so can that wipe out the other variants and take control? Like, this is what I'm getting at. Can a less serious strain of the virus wipe out the more serious ones and take over, and sort of that way it'll eventually?
That's a very good question. And one that I've, you know, wondered about and asked other people about. What has happened in influenza when you had a pandemic? In 1918, the virus, there had been seasonal influenza circulating before that. And 1918 wiped it out. And the only thing you saw after 1918 was H1N1, which was the 1918 virus. Huh. You had a pandemic in 1950s, and it continued to circulate as seasonal influenza for 40 years. In 1957, you had a new influenza virus and a pandemic. It was called H2N2. It wiped out H1N1. H1N1 essentially disappeared from the population. 1968, you had another virus, H3N2. That wiped out H2N2. Nobody, you don't see any H2N2. It hasn't circulated since 1968. H1N1 was reintroduced in 1976, plus the pandemic in 2009 was H1N1.
Right. That was the swine flu, right? Was that the swine flu for that?
Right.
Okay.
Interestingly, that pandemic in 2009, the only virus you saw was H1N1, the 2009 virus. But since then, H3N2 and the 2009 virus have co-circulated.
Wow.
They sort of go back and forth. So the question is, Omicron is so different from Delta that you have very little protection against infection if you were infected by Delta.
I see. Okay.
So does that mean Delta is going to come back in a year?
Right.
Or less after Omicron, after a wave of Omicron goes through? Will they continue to co-circulate? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. And if they do co-circulate, or if another variant emerges, I mean, the viruses are going to continue to change. It's not stopping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of virus will it be? You know, will it be able to bind to cells deep in the lung and cause death, severe disease? You know, we hope not, but we don't know.
So the thing is, we don't know. And that's the thing. That's what it is, a novel virus. So it's all new. You're learning. The scientists are learning as we go along.
And there are people who think there's a link, a negative correlation between transmissibility and severity. But that's not true. There is no law of nature that says the more transmissible a virus is, the less lethal it is.
Right.
That's just not accurate. We hope that that's the case, but it's just not a law of nature. It doesn't have to happen. You could get a lethal virus that is very transmissible, such right. as the second wave of 1918.
Now, are you encouraged by the FDA today approved the second? They did one yesterday, the Pfizer one today, a Merck antiviral drug to take once you've been infected, but before you get really sick and need a hospitalization. Are you encouraged by that? Do you think that'll help us?
Sure. I think, but obviously, the Pfizer drug has much, much better results.
That's what they say, yeah.
And it's also less likely that the virus can develop immunity, and the Merck drug does, in fact, you know, could affect mutations in your own cells. So I think the Pfizer drug's a lot better for a lot of reasons.
Right, and the problem with the Pfizer drug is they say it takes 6 months to make the drug, so it's going to be a delay right. until so, it's readily available.
Yeah. Right, the you know, I'd do the Merck drug better than nothing.
Right.
But in a real marketplace where with equal supplies or with adequate supplies, you know, it couldn't compete.
Gotcha.
But it's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. And final question for you. To the people who won't get vaccinated, I'll give you one story. An old, very dear friend of mine who lives in Los Angeles, I'm now in Florida, so I don't see her often, which I guess is good right now, who informed me that she and her boyfriend both got COVID, and they were in a hotel riding it out. They got the monoclonal antibodies. They got everything, but they were really sick. And I said, but you were vaccinated, right? She said, no, she said, I don't trust Big Pharma. Now, I had a few choice words for her.
Got the monoclonal antibody.
Right, that's what I said.
What do they think, Big Pharma? You know, they think the guy down the druggist down the street put that together?
That's what I said. So I said, you don't trust the vaccine, but you trust it. She goes, well, I know how that works. Well, obviously she doesn't, because the mRNA vaccines, the Moderna and the Pfizer, this is not something that they just developed overnight. This mRNA technology has been in the works for a long time, right?
Yeah. And, you know, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, well, AstraZeneca is not approved in the United States.
Right.
Novavax has just been approved in the European Union. Well, my guess is it'll be approved in the United States. A very good vaccine. Full disclosure, I am stocking it. You know, not a lot of stock, but
gotcha.
Stock.
But the point that I made to her is maybe it is put Big Pharma out of the question. The top scientists, not just here, but around the world, are all saying, take the vaccine. It's effective. It works. It's, for the most part, not harmful. I mean, there's always going to be some side effects. There's always going to be someone who has a reaction to a vaccine, but the statistics are statistically insignificant, right? Or am I wrong?
I mean, you compare it to getting sick.
Right.
Even Omicron, you know, even if Omicron is milder, which has not really been fully established yet.
We still don't know for sure.
In terms of somebody who's not been infected and not been vaccinated, it's not at all clear that Omicron will be milder than that. But yeah.
So are you
compared to the illness is a lot more dangerous than the tiny number of people who have been affected in a serious way by
vaccines. Gotcha. John M. Barry, thank you so much. Thanks for your jumping on with me today so quickly and for the great information. We're all flying kind of blind here. So we're, you know, I like to go to the experts and ask the question directly. And I really appreciate you being available to us.
Okay, thanks. I'm not sure if I'm an expert, but
well, you know more than the average person
one
does.
Thumbs along. Okay.
There you go. Thank you so much, and happy holidays to you.
You too.
He is an expert, right? He can be modest if he wants to, but my goodness, he's a professor at Tulane, and he wrote the book The Great Influenza. I'd say that qualifies him as an expert. So, you're welcome back to the show. We taped that earlier today. You know, it's the holidays, so people are available or not, and I take them when I can get them. But this is a reminder that I'm here. I'm here tomorrow, and I'm here all next week, and we'll be guest hosting the broadcast Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday as well. So, you know, we're here to keep you company through the holidays. Holidays can be a really lonely time, you know? And as I was just telling the people in the YouTube chat, I'm not going anywhere. And I work out of a home studio. So, I mean, I could take some time off, but if I were just in the other room painting or goofing off or sleeping, which is always something that I try to do whenever I can because I don't sleep at night, I'd still feel guilty knowing that I could be on live. So here we are. Tomorrow, by the way, we welcome back to the show the Marsh family. That's you, last week I played for you that Have the New Jab song that they did to the tune of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. Actually, it was more the Jeff Buckley version, but you know what I'm saying. Well, I did another interview with them just a couple of days ago, and I love them. I would adopt them if I could. But I now have friends in Kent, England, so, you know, I got that going for me. Anyway, so that's tomorrow. And then I did throw a question out in the chat room. I've got a bunch of old music interviews. I don't know what we're doing next week, but we'll do something. We'll mix it up. Okay? All right. Howie's coming up in a moment. I do take a moment to invite you to look at the gallery behind me, those of you watching on video. What we're featuring today are some of my faux stained glass creations. It's a technique that I came up with myself. But there's one actual painting there, which is, hold on, the very last one that I did, which I think might be one of my best. This is a St. Bernard. Isn't he cute? So this one I just did on my, I actually found this picture online and said I have to paint it. And and it came out pretty good, I think. So this is available if anybody wants any of these. They're all available. Should you want one? Should you want one made for you? Just email me. I'm Nicole@NicoleSandler.com, and we can talk. I'm surprisingly not busy right now. Got a few, you know, holiday things that I got done in time for the holidays, but now I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs. So bring it on. Okay. You know what? It's just about time for Howie. So, there's one other thing I wanted to tell. I forgot to tell you. So we're on verdict watch, right? The jury in the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, they recessed yesterday at 4:30 when there was no verdict forthcoming until Monday. I guess the judge had plans for Christmas. So they sent the jury home. It's like, okay, we'll resume deliberations Monday morning. Monday? Really? All right. So that's what happened in that case. The Theranos case, Elizabeth Holmes, haven't heard anything about that. So that jury is still deliberating. But yesterday we had heard that the jury deliberating over Kim Potter, that's the former cop from Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, who killed Dante Wright, said she thought she had her taser and she used her actual service gun. The jury had sent a question the other day asking what happens if we can't come to a consensus. So everyone was thinking, oh my goodness, there's going to be a hung jury here. And in fact, today when they said the jury was coming back, they said with the outcome of the trial, or so they didn't say with a verdict. So I think a lot of people thought it was going to be a hung jury, but they came back and they found Kim Potter guilty of both first degree and second degree manslaughter. There were two charges, guilty on both. And all I can think was a Potter was convicted on Christmas Eve. I know it's a little bit of a stretch. And if you don't get the reference, watch It's a Wonderful Life. My husband has never seen It's a Wonderful Life. So when I said to him, a Potter was convicted on Christmas Eve, he looked at me like, huh? But you get it, right? You get it. I get it. You get it. All right. Whose turn is it to mix up the Dirty Debbies today? I think we could use some extra, maybe a dash of eggnog in there or something. All right. Let's get Howie.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Okay. Hey, Howie Klein. Happy Merry Christmas Eve.
Yes, and to you as well.
Thank you. You know, I also came up with another thing. Do you realize that today, Christmas Eve, a Potter was found guilty?
Yes, I saw that. That's wonderful.
My husband didn't get the reference because he's never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
I kind of feel sorry for her in a way.
I
watched her on TV a little bit, not much, but you know, while I was putting on my socks one day.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't seem like she was like really like a venal, evil person.
No, but dangerous, because this is a cop who's a 26-year veteran and she was that unhinged. Did you see the video after the shooting? I mean, she was just, she the fact that she shot her gun after she said taser, 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 and didn't know the difference, and then had that reaction, didn't try to help the kid, didn't call for medical help, just started sobbing and freaking out, but didn't alert anybody, didn't try to get help or anything.
Yeah. She was kind of pathetic.
Yes.
But and the evil comes in with the system, I thought, than with her. I mean, it's just my opinion, but I just started thinking, like, what a horrible, horrible system we have where they train police this way, and this is, you know, among themselves, it's what they're expected to do and how they're expected to behave. And, you know, I kind of felt sorry for her.
I do feel sorry for her.
What are they going to do now with her, do you know?
She's going to jail. In fact, the judge said, all right, we are going to take you into custody. And they set sentencing for sometime in March. But they put her in jail. And the attorney said, wait a minute, can't she be released on bond until sentencing at least? I mean, she's a Catholic woman and it's Christmas.
My God.
do you believe that? I mean, that's when my jaw dropped. And the judge said, no. I'm treating this case as I would any other case in my courtroom. There was a death here. There was a homicide here. She was found guilty. She's got to go to jail. And so she's going to jail. She's in jail.
Could you imagine an attorney saying something like,
she's Catholic.
She's a Jewish woman. Right. She's a Buddhist woman. She's a Confucian woman.
Right. No.
Where did that come from?
I know. Right. Oh, excuse me. So she's a good Christian. She should be allowed out? I don't think it works that way. And neither did the judge.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that didn't help, I don't think. I mean, that kind of a statement. I mean, what the weird? That's weird.
No, it's very weird. But the judge, I mean, here's the thing. The defense attorney, I think, thought they were going to get a mistrial. Everyone did, because the jury had sent questions, two questions the other day. They asked, one, what happens if they can't come to a consensus? And then the second question they asked was if they could remove the guns from the evidence box, which were zip-tied in, so that they could hold them and see. And the judge said, yes, of course. And I think that's what turned whoever the holdouts were, because you put these two guns together, the taser and this Glock, and there's nothing similar about them. The taser is bright yellow. It's plastic. It's light. Right? How do you confuse that? And you've been on the force for 26 years. You've been trained with these weapons for 26 years. She should not be on the force. And she killed somebody. So,
right.
You know.
Certainly should be on the force. But I mean, I wonder if any of them should be on the force. I mean, maybe. I mean, maybe there are some good ones. I bet there are.
I'm sure there are. But here's the thing. There was an I wish I had pulled it. There's an op-ed. I think it's in the Washington Post, but it might be the New York Times, written by some high level, like, military people who are saying they are scared that if Trump does run again, or even if he doesn't, a Trump clone, more on death sentence, say he runs in his place, and they don't win, that next time they will have some kind of a coup, and they think it'll come from inside the military. Because so many military and so many police are right-wing crazies, and I don't think they do enough psychological testing before they let someone on a police force or in the military.
Yeah. I mean, people who think they're on our side have to have their own heads examined.
Right, right. So there is all that. So Howie Klein, it is Christmas Eve Eve. It's also Festivus. Do you celebrate Festivus?
I don't celebrate Christmas or anything.
But not Festivus is the day you display the feats of strength and you air your grievances. So I sort of, you know. I celebrate Festivus every day.
You celebrate Festivus every day, right?
That's right. I do. You just got my joke. Yes, I do. So I think that's what you do. One of my grievances is that we're stuck at home again, another Christmas time, stuck isolating because of this damn virus. I spoke a few minutes ago with John Barry. He's the guy who wrote the book called The Great Influenza about the 1918 Spanish flu. Because a listener yesterday reminded me that in his book, he said the way that flu ended, and I'm oversimplifying and paraphrasing here, but basically a less serious variant of that flu came in and obliterated the original ones, the H1N1, and eventually it got weaker and weaker. It stayed with us in a form of a flu. It never completely went away, but that's what kind of killed off the Spanish flu, so ending that pandemic 100 years ago. So what I asked him was, if this Omicron is also much more contagious, it overtook a Delta in the U.S. in like a week, which is astounding. He even said that's unheard of, how communicable it is. And it could essentially obliterate Delta and the other varietals to be the predominant one, and maybe... But nobody know. Maybe it'll kill it off, but nobody really knows yet. We have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, I hope so.
I hope so too.
The good news that I have felt, I don't know if I shared this with you, but in the space of 6 weeks, West Virginia, I don't know what caused this, and I haven't seen anything in the press about it, but West Virginia went from the least vaccinated state, 41% fully vaccinated, to one of the most vaccinated. I haven't checked lately, but the last time I looked, they were at 71. They were like beating California and New York, or tied
really?
In New York.
Wow.
I mean, how the hell? I mean, this is a state full of Trumpers, and they all ran out suddenly, and in the space of 6 weeks, they all got vaccinated.
That's wild. But
it gave me a feeling of good news. Now, on the other hand, the other really, really backward states, socially and politically backward states like Wyoming and Idaho, they didn't budge. They're still at in the low 40s or in the 40% vaccinated.
Well, I'm wondering if Trump had any influence on them, because he and Bill O'Reilly did their history tour. And both admitted they'd been vaccinated. And then he did another interview, I guess, last night, where he admitted that he's vaccinated and boosted, and he's encouraging people to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I use that video on a post that I'm writing now. But you're right. But the West Virginia thing happened weeks before that.
Oh.
So maybe what Trump just did will help in some of the states that really refuse are Idaho, Wyoming, Mississippi, and Alabama. Those are the worst of them. But all over the country, there are counties, these super Trump counties, like counties where Trump got 95% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And in counties like that, like 10% of the people are vaccinated. Now think about that. Counties in the U.S. that you could just wander into, 10% vaccinated.
Wow. That's frightening.
So maybe that those interviews that he's done, where there was some booing, but not a lot of booing,
right.
very little booing,
yep.
But some. Maybe he'll influence those people. I hope so.
Maybe. But I'm letting the listeners know, there's a post up at downwithtyranny.com in which you talk about Joe Manchin and Bernie Sanders, and they never ran against each other, but they were on the ballot at the same time. And you said in all but, I think, 13 counties, Bernie Sanders got more votes in his race than Joe Manchin got in his. Do I have that right?
Yeah, there were primaries. Actually, they were 2 years apart.
Oh, okay.
But county after county after county, they were going after the same people, Democrats who live in those counties. And Bernie beat him statewide, and Bernie beat him in all but 13 counties. And the reason that I went to the trouble of getting that information and transcribing it county by county for each of those races, and it took me hours to do, but the reason I did it is because Manchin says, Bernie's an outsider, doesn't know anything about our state, and he's coming in and trying to tell us what to do. And that's what he keeps saying. Well, I mean, he does know about their state, and people know that, and people voted for him. And then I was surprised to see that more people voted for him than voted for Manchin.
Right.
Which was shocking to me, just absolutely shocking.
It is shocking. And, I've a friend who is a lifelong resident of West Virginia, She now goes by Robin Kincaid, used to be known as Bob Kincaid, but she's Robin Kincaid now. And she does a radio show, and she is West Virginia. And she's always told me that if, you know, I've asked, could any other Democrat win? She said, no, Joe Manchin is a thing unto himself. A Democrat can't win in West Virginia. Well,
wait one second.
Yes.
The governor ran as a Democrat. He switched parties since then, but he hasn't run as a Republican. Right. He's only run as a Democrat.
She's wrong on that front, but she's saying that today it wouldn't happen. If Joe Manchin, you know, decided to run for governor again, a Democrat will not win that Senate seat. That's her contention anyway. So I thought I would do a little. And Bernie,
right?
And Bernie Sanders the other day said, I'll pay for a poll of West Virginia to see if West Virginians want lower drug costs, you know, lower cost drugs. They want Medicare to cover their eyes, ears, and teeth. If they want the child tax credit to continue. He said, I would pay for a poll. And I said, you know what? Let's conduct our own unscientific poll. So, and I've done this from time to time. West Virginia is a one-party state. So only
No need to conduct a poll.
Okay.
There's one that's out, and it is a scientific poll.
Okay.
You want to hear it?
Yeah, but let me tell you this first, because this is a great story. So okay. I decided, I go online, I pull up White Pages, and I look for a Sandler in West Virginia. I didn't care what county, I didn't care what town, just somebody with my last name. Figuring I'm going to get some credit. Well, it rang and rang and rang and nobody picked up. And of course, live radio, what are you going to do? But then Tuesday, I get an email. Listen to this email. It says, we got a phone call early Monday evening from, and named my number. Since we didn't recognize the number, we didn't pick up. But the missus likes to figure out the scam. So went on the web with the number and came up with Nicole Sandler. So she wants to know if we're related. It goes on like that. Then he says, we listened to the podcast, and as we are Blue Nation citizens, we very much enjoyed and agreed with your points. I think the autocracy is inevitable by 2024, if not sooner, for the reasons you cited, plus that the U.S. uses the Electoral College versus the popular vote, and goes on and on. He says, we live in West Virginia. Senator Joe is really a Republican, but runs as a D because that makes his path through the primary to the general easy. He'll never have serious opposition in West Virginia from the Democratic Party. He will never support any progressive initiative because he knows his general election opponent will call him on it. And any environment protections initiative will hurt his pocketbook. So no, the Democrats never had a Senate majority. And so I emailed him back, and I'm like, he said, did you really call or did a scammer spoof your number? And I said, no, it was me. I was trying to find someone who just at random who would talk to me. And I'm shocked, frankly, that I found one of us. Would you come on with me? And what he said was, and I'm already breaking the agreement. He said, we are for those things, and we're probably around at that time, but we live in Let's Go Brandon land, all of our neighbors and service providers. We are very careful not to discuss politics outside the home. So no last name, no other information that would give anyone any idea who we are. Don't ask what county we're in, how long we've been here, where else we've lived, our age, education, etc. And then, you know, we went back and forth a few times, and he said, don't read my email. I'm like, okay, I'm not even going to go there. I just write his email, but that's all I said. So there's no way anyone can figure out who it is from this. But he's so paranoid that somebody's going to figure out that he's a Democrat.
Wow. I mean, right? It's funny. There are a lot of Democrats in West Virginia, but I guess not where he is. He sounds extremely intelligent.
Yes.
As well, like way smarter than the average Trump voter. That's right.
But that blew me away. When I got that email, I was just roared in laughter. And then after going back and forth by the last email exchange, I'm like, all right, I'm not going to call you. I thank you for writing back. I'm glad to hear you're one of us. I'm sorry you have to hide who you are from your neighbors. That really sucks. But good luck to you. Happy holidays. And, you know, have a nice life, I guess.
I mean, you know, one of the things that I've noticed that in some of these counties in West Virginia, when Bernie ran in 2016, now he didn't run against Trump either, right? Trump ran in the Republican primary. Bernie ran in the Democratic
primary. Yep.
Bernie won every county in the state. Trump did really well, too. Mm-hmm. But Bernie beat Trump in county after county after county, and not in all of them, but in there were so many counties where Bernie had more votes than Trump did.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, your friend there probably lives in a Republican-leaning area. There are plenty of those, too.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to tell you that this company called Data for Progress, who are really good, did a couple of polls of West Virginia voters. So if you don't mind, I'd like to
Please.
Read some of the results to you.
Yes.
So this I'll start with the most extreme thing, because this is shocking. The question is this. The American Jobs Plan includes a proposal that puts America on a path to achieving 100% and reliable electric achieving a 100% clean and reliable electricity system by 2035. Do you support or oppose this proposal? So statewide, this is just in Virginia, West Virginia.
West Virginia.
56% supported it, 36% opposed it.
Wow.
Among Democrats, 88% supported it, only 8% opposed it. That 8%, that must be Joe Manchin's base. And then among independents, 55% supported it, 38% opposed it. Even among Republicans, only 51% opposed it.
Wow.
39% were in favor of it. So that, I mean, that we're talking about 100% clean and reliable energy. And everyone knows that does not mean clean coal.
No, there is overall, no such thing as clean coal, again, for the nth time. But yes, no, I think we're not giving West Virginia enough credit. I could be wrong.
Exactly.
But it sounds like we're not. Yeah.
Yep. I don't know that everyone is like Mr. Sandler there, but we're not giving them enough credit.
Right.
Overall, the Data for Progress also asked if people supported the Build Back Better plan in general. So not you know, and they mentioned clean energy, but they also mentioned very prominently tax cuts for families with children and Medicare benefits and child care, long-term care for seniors, you know, all the major things in the Build Back Better plan. They asked people if they supported. West Virginia voters, 68% yes, they support it, 25% no. Democrats, 90% for it, 4% against it. Independents, 64% for it, 31% against it. Even Republicans were more for it than against it. 56% of self-identified Republicans said they support the plan. 34% oppose the plan.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, Joe Manchin is in his own universe, and Bernie doesn't Bernie's welcome to poll, but he doesn't have to poll. Polling's been done.
There you go. I hope somebody runs against Manchin. If Manchin runs again, he's up not next year, but in 3 years. So anything could happen by then.
Well, yes. I mean, and we did have a really good candidate who ran against him last time.
Yes. Swearingen,
you know,
right?
Raise much money.
Right.
And, you know, she did have some grassroots support. It's considerable in state and out of state. And she didn't do badly. She didn't do well, but she didn't do badly. And people didn't know her. I mean, I think if she, many people don't even really know who Manchin is much. They know a little about him. Now everyone knows a lot about Manchin.
Yeah.
He's like a household word. And I would think that if she ran against him again, she would beat him this time in the Democratic primary.
I hope she does. Are you in touch with her?
Well, we endorsed her. Huh? And yes, you know, she's very aware of all this stuff.
Okay.
And she's going to make her own calculation. She's not going to leave it to me. I mean, we've been amazingly successful this year in, you know, urging really good people to run for office and then seeing them actually jump in the race. We had one today that I was really happy about with, what's her name, Christina Garcia, who's a really outspoken and incredible, forceful assemblywoman right now. She represents SELA, the southeast part of Los Angeles. And her district has been, the congressional district where she lives, has been changed. So it combined parts of Lowenthal's old district with Lucille Roybal Allard's district.
Easy for you to say. Isn't she the one who's retiring?
They're both retiring.
Oh.
Both of those people are retiring. Here we have a, you know, D plus 1,000 district, as they come. and I mean basically no Republicans, and it's open. So immediately a stand-in for a Republican jumped in, a guy named the mayor of Long Beach, whose name is Robert Garcia. So he has a D next to his name. He's been a Republican. He founded two Republican clubs in the district.
Mm-hmm.
And even now that when he claims he's a Democrat, obviously if you want to go anywhere from that area, you have to be a Democrat.
Right.
So he makes believe he's a Democrat, but still votes for Republican things and does everything a Republican would do. And I'm shocked to see, decent Democrats falling for that and endorsing him. I mean, the Democratic establishment, of course, is all for him, as you would expect. But I'm, talking to some of my friends in Congress. I went back and forth with one of them today, who I just love. I mean, she's one of the best members of Congress, and she endorsed the guy. And I'm just thinking, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, people
and she knows him personally, and, she feels she ought to do it. And a big mistake is, in my opinion, because Christina, they both have the same last name as Garcia,
mm-hmm.
and Christina is amazing. I mean, you want to see more people like Ilhan and Rashida and AOC and Jamal Bowman. You want to see more people like that? Well, that's what we got there with Christina Garcia.
And that's why people need to go to downwithtyranny.com/blue-america-pack. And you see all the great candidates that Blue America has endorsed and how you vet them. Hey, I got something.
We didn't put Christina on there yet.
Oh, no?
Okay. I love her and we talked her into running, the final stages of the vetting process. You have to do it. It's step by step. And
right.
we're almost there. We'll be there in a couple of days.
Okay. Well, Howie, knowing that you do this, you run the Blue America Pack, somebody sent me a leaked ad from the RNCC, and I thought you might like to hear it. You wanted
NRC.
Well, this says the NRCC. It says RNCC, but it's
incorrect. Then
okay, so it's the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Committee.
Yes.
This will give you a good idea of their strategy for 2022 and 2024. You ready for this?
I am.
Okay, here we go.
Joe Biden is really Chinese with a socialist agenda. Sign our petition and demand Joe Biden resign now. Nancy Pelosi's eyes glow red and she's carrying Bill Maher's baby. That's why Joe must go. JFK Jr. has landed in a UFO and has a fabulous new diet. But you'll never know. That's because of Joe. Demand Joe Biden resign by signing our petition. Take your dog's balls out of your mouth and call now. 1-800, the dingleberries in my ass crack are my brains. Everything we say is factually true. It says so right here in red Times New Roman font. So demand Joe Biden's resignation. Call 1-800. Much as I try, I give you the website, but it won't be found with a jitterbug phone. The number again is 1-800. We can buy airtime on MSNBC and CNN primetime because Democrats don't think communication strategies are all that important. So call now. 1-800. My full diaper is my brain. And sign the petition demanding Joe Biden resign. Be the 10th caller and win a Steve Bannon scented candle.
This message pays for airtime to anyone who will air it.
That was our friend Boca Brittany Summers.
You were right and I was wrong. That is the RNCC.
There you go. That's Boca for you. She sent that along. She's the one who did your intro, the Chucky Schmucky.
I love that.
Intro. That's her. She did that. So anyway, we've got a few. Actually, we're almost out of time. You have a post that just went up this afternoon that people do need to read, though. And it deals with sort of what the story that broke this week, where we talked about it briefly last week about the Stock Act and how all these members of Congress are, defying it, including what's his name? Maloney, Sean Patrick, whatever his name is,
the head of the DCCC.
Right. And Nancy Pelosi was asked about it. And she's like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. We have a right to, we live in a capitalist society. We have a right to trade stocks. Wrong answer, Nance.
Very wrong.
And so,
well, I mean, I think I was the first to hear that and go on about it. But now it's everybody has been talking about that. It's become like a major, major thing that she's never going to get. It'll be part of part of her legacy.
Yeah, I hear you. So anyway, we didn't get to it today, but it is the newest post up at downwithtyranny.com. Will this be the year of the fat cats more than other years of the fat cats? yeah, they're not going to change the rules. They did. They put up the Stock Act, and they're still violating it.
Yeah, the problem is there are lots and lots of celebrities and Wall Street bankers who see, you know, celebrities like Trump, who have nothing to do with politics at one time and or even now, and then bankers like the guy who just got elected, Youngkin, in
Virginia, right?
Hey, if they could do it, I could do it. So now you've got all these celebrities and bankers, Wall Street bankers, running for Congress. And you know, these are the wrong people to be running.
Right.
So I did a story about that. I talked about some of the people running, and I talked to some of the Blue America candidates who are, you know, school teachers and normal, like, workers. And, you know, the difference between them running and, you know, some guy whose whole life is based on usury.
Right. Right. No, these are the people who've been bribing the politicians for so long, and they're thinking, why should I give the money to someone else when I can take money to do the same thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh. You have plans for the next couple of days, Howie? You're just hanging.
Yeah, I'm hiding out. I'm not going
out. Us too. Not going anywhere. And next week, you're here with us next week too then, yes? Because I think I'm the only host working through the holidays, but I'm here. So I will be here next Thursday, the 30th. Will you be here?
Will I be? Of course I'll be here.
Cool. So we're on.
I'm here.
Cool. Good. Good. I'm excited. So we'll talk again next week. And
are some of your guests not going to be on?
Yes, people are gone. And other shows are all on vacation. So, you know, we're on the Progressive Voices Network. I follow Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, then me. They're all gone. They're all, you know, running best ofs. But I'm letting everyone know we're here. We're live. You know, as I said earlier, I have a home studio. So I'm not going anywhere. And if I were just in the other room goofing off or painting or doing whatever and not doing my show, I'd feel really guilty. It's like, why am I not in there doing this? So I'm here.
Oh, that reminds me, your Bernie thing that you did was so good the other day. I saw the painting.
Oh, the painting. You like that? I'll make you one if you want.
Yes.
Cool. I will paint you one. You got it.
I just love it. It was so good. It was really just heartwarming to see it.
Oh, nice. Thank you. It was the Bernie at the inauguration last year. You know, the mitten meme that became a meme. And somebody, actually, the first time I did it, somebody asked me, would you paint it? And in fact, Dar, who is probably in the YouTube chat room now, asked, can you put my dog in Bernie's arms? So Bernie's there with the mittens and her little dog's head is sticking out in his lap. But so I've painted a few versions of it, but I will do one for you. Let me know if you want me to customize it in any way.
You're the artist. I'll leave it up to you.
Okay. You got it. I will start working on that this weekend then. All right.
Wonderful.
Cool.
I mean, maybe instead of a dog's head sticking out, maybe you could put like a candidate's head sticking out.
Except I'm not good at people. I'm not good at humor. But the only reason I was able to do Bernie's face is because most of it is covered by the mask.
it just spoke to me. I mean, I always see the stuff that you do.
Cool.
And I just looked at it. And I just thought, wow, this is so awesome.
Oh, good.
When I forgot, and then when you mentioned
the painting,
it came to me right away.
All right. Well, I will paint you one. That'll be my gift to you. All right. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And when you're there, check out the Blue America PAC page and support these progressive candidates in the primaries. It's the only way we're going to turn things around. And we need to turn things around. All right.
Yeah. Do you have to go now?
No.
I just want to say one thing. I'll keep it very short.
That's okay.
Because you sparked me.
Yeah.
There was a primary in Virginia, in Norfolk, Virginia, the other day.
Uh-huh.
And someone resigned. He endorsed the establishment candidate. The governor endorsed the establishment candidate. The whole, you know, everybody, the whole establishment endorsed the establishment candidate. And you know, it's a completely Democratic district. You win the primary, you're the next member of the legislature. It goes that way. No Republicans.
Wow.
The district is literally no. It's all in Norfolk. It's almost entirely African American community, and there's no Republicans gonna ever win there.
Okay.
And a progressive decided to challenge the establishment candidate, and she goes in and she says, you know, these are the reasons you should vote for me. And guess what? She won the primary.
Wow.
This happened on Tuesday.
Look at that.
There was no chance of getting a progressive in there, except
in the primary. That's the only way to do it. This woman will fight for all of the values that we are talking about all the time on this show.
Great. Okay, well then, so when is the election? Is it a special election happening soon?
Yeah, it's a special election in a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay.
I did a post about it today. So, you know, if you're looking through my blog and you see a picture of an absolutely gorgeous young woman, you'll know that's the story.
Oh, I do see her right now. In some places, primaries are more important than general elections, like the one 2 days ago. Her name is Jackie Glass. Very nice. I will read this as soon as I'm done.
Isn't she just beautiful? She, and a glowing, beautiful smile.
Yep. Yeah. she is.
You can just see inside her. I felt, you know, when you look at her, you can just look into her and see her, and she just sounds like such a wonderful person, and she looks like such a wonderful person, and when you read her stuff, she reads like a wonderful person.
Cool. Here, I'm putting her picture up on the screen.
Have a wonderful Christmas, or if you celebrate, and if you don't, have a wonderful Christmas anyway.
Thank you, and you too, Howie, and happy Festivus, and I will see you next week. Next week it is New Year's Eve, and it's also my wedding anniversary is New Year's Eve, so we're celebrating all around. That's the holiday we celebrate here.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Have a good one.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay,
I'll see you next week. Thanks, Howie.
Bye, Nicole.
Bye. All right, so that is Jackie Glass on the screen for those of you watching. All right, we're done for today. We will be here tomorrow. And tomorrow I have, as I said, we welcome to back for a return engagement, the Marsh family, who I adore. And you will, too, when you hear them. We sat down just a couple of days ago there in England. We taped it because it's by the time we're on here, the kids are in bed over there because it's later. But I'll be hanging in the chat room. I promise you will enjoy it. And we've got lots of fun Marsh family songs to share. And maybe we'll go a little long and I'll throw in a few others. I am also going to do a couple of music hours that'll run on the Progressive Voices Network over the weekend, like on Saturday on Christmas Day. So maybe I'll podcast those or something. I certainly can't put them on YouTube because, you know, there's some real music in there. But I'll make sure you know where you can hear them. All right. And with that, I will leave you with the news. All right. Because believe it or not, there's not a lot of news happening, but there's still some news happening. And this is already out of date because, you know, a potter was convicted on Christmas Eve. All right. With that, I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Thanks for being here. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
2 years after COVID-19, a novel coronavirus, was first detected in Wuhan, China, you'd think we'd be nearing the end of the pandemic. Not so fast. Thanks to the very contagious Omicron variant, now the most widely detected in the United States. So now, for the second year in a row, doctors and nurses on the front lines will be treating those patients over the Christmas holiday. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, nearly 70,000 Americans were hospitalized with COVID-19 as of Wednesday. That's up from around 45,000 in early November. In related news, the FDA on Wednesday authorized Pfizer's antiviral pill, Paxlovid, to treat COVID-19. It's the first antiviral pill authorized for infected people to take at home before they get sick enough to be hospitalized. But the drug takes 6 months to manufacture, so it'll be well into 2022 before it's widely available. And breaking news, just as I'm recording What's News today, the FDA on Thursday morning announced it has authorized a second COVID-19 pill, this one from Merck, noting that the Pfizer pill is significantly more effective, but the Merck pill is expected to be in greater supply early on. Options. Options are good. Meanwhile, South Africa's top infectious disease scientist on Wednesday said that the surge of the Omicron cases there is now plummeting as fast as it rose. After a near vertical rise, he said in an interview, "We're going down, right back down." While it's not proof of anything, the news has fueled hopes that Omicron will peak and then drop as quickly. In the U.S., the 7-day average of new coronavirus cases hit 168,000.
8,981 on Wednesday, surpassing the summertime peak of the Delta variant surge. But one other bit of encouraging news. On Wednesday, South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases released a study that, although it hasn't yet been peer-reviewed, reinforced evidence that Omicron is causing milder COVID-19 cases than previous variants. I'll take it. Whatever relief is coming isn't coming quickly enough. Two more senior congressional Democrats have now tested positive for COVID. The 81-year-old House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn of South Carolina missed his granddaughter's wedding on Wednesday when he tested positive. And who gets married on a Wednesday? And the 77-year-old Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois announced that she and her husband also tested positive. So many mask mandates have been put back in place around the country as Omicron spreads like a blanket. The Supreme Court announced Wednesday that they'll hold a special hearing on January 7th to consider challenges to the president's nationwide vaccine or testing requirement for large employers and his separate vaccine mandate for healthcare workers. Both have been at least partially blocked from going into effect by lower courts after challenges from Republican-led states and from business and religious coalitions. Jim Clyburn may be sidelined by COVID for now. He says he has no symptoms. But the select committee investigating January 6th is forging ahead, announcing Wednesday afternoon that it sent a letter to Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio asking him to appear before the committee to answer questions, quote, about conversations he had on January 5th or 6th with those in the Willard War Room, the Trump legal team, White House personnel, or others involved in organizing or planning the actions and strategies for January 6th. In the letter, committee chair Benny Thompson suggested a date of January 3rd or 4th for the testimony and noted that when previously asked whether he'd talked to the committee, Jordan insisted he had, quote, nothing to hide. Jordan is the second Trump ally to get an interview request this week. Representative Scott Perry declined the committee's request to voluntarily sit down with investigators. Stay tuned. Oh, and the former guy's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, lost his legal bid to block the January 6th committee from subpoenaing his phone records and to hold off demands he speak to the panel. The ruling Wednesday came one day after Flynn asked a federal judge in Florida for a temporary restraining order, and it's the first quick response to a lawsuit from a House witness after several went to court to try to invalidate the committee and block the House from pursuing their phone records. Some good news as we head closer to the end of the year. President Biden announced Wednesday that he would extend a suspension of student loan payments until May 1st to help people facing financial problems due to the ongoing pandemic. The pause had been scheduled to expire February 1st. In a statement, the president said, quote, given these considerations, today my administration is extending the pause on federal student loan repayments for an additional 90 days through May 1st, 2022, as we manage the ongoing pandemic and further strengthen our economic recovery. The president on Wednesday also signed legislation that allows the Capitol Police to directly request the assistance of the National Guard. Good move. The bill was passed by both the House and Senate without opposition. And verdict watch. The jury in the case of Elizabeth Holmes reconvenes Thursday at 11:30 after jurors failed to reach a verdict on Tuesday. The jurors in the Kimberly Potter trial also resumed deliberations Thursday morning. Meanwhile, jurors in the Ghislaine Maxwell case won't be back deliberating until Monday, getting a Christmas break after they failed to reach a verdict on Wednesday. And finally, it is December 23rd.
A Festivus for the rest of us.
Time to air those grievances and show your feats of strength. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
So it's measuring changes in all of those prices
Okay.
Every month. And it puts it in a little index.